Gary Stroik has earned the CFP designation and is Vice President and Chief Investment Officer and Lead Portfolio Manager of WBI Investments, which offer funds and ETFs. He's also a periodic contributor to Financial Advisor magazine. And today, we're going to talk about what has become, I think, the most popular investment of the day, exchange-traded funds, or so-called ETFs. Hey, Gary, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
You know, a lot of people know what ETFs are, but for those who don't, give me the quick, down-and-dirty definition of an ETF.
Well, an ETF, as the name suggests, is a mutual fund that is exchange-traded. It means it trades all day long. A regular open-end mutual fund that most people are familiar with, the price is whatever it is at 4 o'clock. You get it after the close, whatever that price is. And any buys and sells you do during the day don't count until the market closes. An ETF, you can buy and sell all day long at whatever the value is at that moment in time.
Right. And there's other things, too. That means if it's traded like a stock, you can short it if that's in your interest. You can have calls and puts right against it. So it's a more flexible kind of form. And the fact that you can trade it during the day is a big plus. Are there tax differences to the investor? If I'm an investor in an ETF that invests in a certain basket of stocks and I invest in a mutual fund that invests in a very similar basket of stocks, is there one advantage over another tax-wise to an ETF?
Yeah, I think because of the way ETFs are created and destroyed, if you will, created and redeemed by a special kind of market maker, an authorized participant, they can do tax-free exchanges of shares for baskets of shares. And so you can wash away some of the tax effect that otherwise would happen from the buying and selling of the shares. One of the things that people found in the past with mutual funds is that if a portfolio manager sells appreciated stock, those gains pass through to the shareholder, even if he just showed up yesterday and bought the shares.
I know. It's a terrible thing and has caught a lot of people by surprise. A good advisor would know how to handle something like that, but you got to be extremely careful. So, Gary, how are they used? What's the best way to think of an ETF and putting it in your portfolio?
Well, they have a few uses. I think the big use that was part of the genesis is it was a very, very inexpensive way to get a broad array exposure to something. And that has since morphed into an inexpensive way to get an exposure to something that would be difficult to get some other way. So if you wanted to buy a portfolio of emerging market bonds, for example, an ETF would be an inexpensive way to do that instead of trying to go out and do that on your own, or commodities or real estate investment trusts, or just consumer discretionary companies. So it has really expanded to allow people to get almost unlimited exposure to almost anything they would want to invest in.
Yeah, it's actually been one of the most creative and successful areas or products that Wall Street has created since time that I can remember. So being a creative business, there's a lot of new entrants into this market all the time, and there's a lot of different choices, which, you know, is a positive and a negative. But the one thing that is indicative of an ETF is its general low cost, right?
Yes. And the reason for the low cost, I think, if for most ETFs, not all, but most ETFs are designed to follow an index because that's what the Securities and Exchange Commission allowed. The ETF is a mutual fund, but it operates under a special exemption that allows it to trade all day. It breaks all the rules of mutual funds, if you will, under an exemption that's been granted. And that exemption was originally granted mostly just for index replication.
Yeah.
So if you're just reproducing the S&P 500 or some other index, you can do that at very low cost. There's not a lot of people you have to hire to do that. As the ETFs start pursuing more aggressive strategies or more diversified strategies, or what's commonly called today the smart beta or alternative beta strategies, those costs have gone up because the work involved in putting them together and running them has gone up.
And it's not only stocks we're talking about. Well, you did mention commodities, but bonds also are included in this ETF family now. So if you wanted to buy a portfolio of a mixture of government and corporate bonds or municipal bonds or just pure governments, if you wanted to bet in a particular fashion of interest rates going down or going up, you could. If you wanted to invest in the group of foreign countries making up the big index over there, or you just wanted to invest in France, or you wanted to short Greece, you know, whatever you wanted to do, those are all now available. So with all this new product comes some dangers here. Tell us about those.
Well, I think one of the dangers can be that people misunderstand what's going to happen to the ETF in different environments. They think it's going to do one thing, and it really does something very, very different. There can be unexpected tax consequences. We mentioned there are tax advantages to ETFs, but some ETFs are organized as grantor trusts or partnerships, and people file the tax return, and they think they're done, and then a K-1 or a grantor trust letter comes in the mail, and they think, what's this about? I have additional tax work to do? And those things tend to come pretty late. So
yeah,
that can be a surprise. And it can be a surprise if you think that a German market index type ETF is going to behave pretty much like any other kind of index would behave, or an emerging market index will behave like others will. They can be a lot more volatile. And I think, like any other, it's a great tool, but you have to use it right.
You know, years and years ago, a client came to me and he said he wanted to make a bet on oil prices. And so I went and I bought him an ETF based on the price of oil. And in that ETF, they actually bought futures contracts. But it turned out the way it was structured, and I won't go into the details, it didn't actually move with the price of oil. There was some kind of aspect to the way the futures were trading, which negated the ability of this particular ETF to move with the price of oil. And price of oil moved up, but this thing just didn't do anything. And I was like, wait, what happened here? You know, so it was more going in there than I just originally thought. I was young and naive back then, and actually ETFs were rather new. So that was a lesson, you know, that I had to learn. One of the things that we were talking about off air too was this idea about, you know, looking at the highest rate of return when choosing your ETF. Why is there a certain danger in that?
Well, you know, people understand that they want a high return and they want the biggest gain they can get. But usually what they forget about is that also comes with the biggest loss you can get.
Mm-hmm.
The volatility is up and down. And the problem is that the down hurts more than the gain gives you. I'll give you an example. Yeah. If you lose 20% of your money, you need 25% on what's left just to get back to where you started.
Yeah.
If you lose 50% of your money, you must get a 100% return just to get back where you started.
Yeah. That's a very good point. Also, let me make one other point. Emotionally, too, it's been proved that the feeling of pain of a loss is greater than the pleasure of a gain. So not only is it harder to make your money back, but when it goes against you, if it's a very volatile investment and more volatile than you expected, you may make an indiscreet investment decision based upon some emotional factor rather than using calm reasoning to do that. We were also talking about this idea that the series of returns really matters. This is off the ETF subject, but using your example of losing 50% and having to earn 100% to get back to even. So if you're just entering retirement, couldn't that hurt you?
Oh, you never get done. You're going to also start beginning liquidating or taking income from
the
investment.
At the same
time. You're
going to
stop putting money into the pot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you ever would recover from that.
Yeah. My guest is Gary Stroik. He is a portfolio manager of WBI Investments, which offers funds and ETFs. He's also a periodic contributor to Financial Advisor Magazine, which is how we found him. Hey, Gary, thank you so much for joining us and spending your time.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for the conversation.